We have begun a study of the letter in the New Testament identified as 2 Peter. Remember that the Apostle Peter wrote two of the New Testament letters. We've covered the first letter, and now we're taking a look at the second letter. We're spending quite a bit of time looking at the first 11 verses. We've already covered them in a general way, and we pointed out from the opening 11 verses of chapter 1 that God has provided a number of very special blessings for the benefit of his people. In verses 3 and 4, we learn that God has provided what we need so that we can be partakers of the divine nature. And to be more specific along those lines, God has given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. He's also given us exceeding great and precious promises. But then we learn from verses 5 through 11 that God has provided his people with the Christian graces. And the reason he has done so is to keep his children from falling. So it's important for us to study the graces, understand them, and then put them into practice. And notice that those seven characteristics that we call the Christian graces are to be added with all diligence. In other words, this is something that deserves our utmost attention, our careful attention. And it's not something you can accomplish in just a short time. This is a lifelong effort to grow and to develop these very special graces. Faith, of course, is the foundation upon which the graces are to be added. We did quite a study of faith last Wednesday evening from Hebrews chapter 11, which is the great faith chapter of the Bible. Now this evening, we want to turn our attention to the first of the Christian graces, and that is virtue. If we're going to talk about something, we need to know what we're talking about, so let's be sure that we understand what virtue is. Now in general, this is in general terms, virtue refers to moral goodness or being morally good. Of course, the Bible teaches God's people to be morally good. However, the virtue under consideration in the Christian graces goes just a little bit further than that. It involves what we might call vigor, courage, and the determination to do what is right. So in general terms, virtue has reference to moral goodness, but to be more specific in the Christian graces, virtue has reference to the courage and the determination to do what is right. Is it always easy to do what is right? No, it isn't, but it's always right. And of course, we're concerned with pleasing God. Let's look at several illustrations of virtue being demonstrated by Bible characters. Let's first look at David. 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is a great Bible story. I never get tired of reading it and studying it. And David was known for virtue. However, there were several times when he did not pursue virtue, and it cost him dearly. But in general, David was a man of virtue. He was known as a man after God's own heart. Let's read about him when he was just a very young man. This, of course, has to do with the occasion when he took on the giant. Remember that the Israelites were in battle with the Philistines, and the Philistines had a champion. He's identified as Goliath. He was a huge man. He was a great warrior. And he would come out morning and evening and issue a challenge to the Israelites. And when he issued his challenge, the Israelites would run in the opposite direction. They were scared of him. Now his challenge was, you send me a man to fight. And if your man will defeat me, then the Philistines will be your servants. However, if I defeat him, then the Israelites will be our servants. That was the challenge. Well, David was sent by his father to check on the welfare of his brothers who were serving in Saul's army. While David was there checking on the welfare of his brothers, he heard this challenge that was issued by the giant. Well, eventually, David was going out to meet the giant. Let's begin at verse 40. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted, I always love this statement, and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. I'm supposing that the Philistine giant was out in front of the Philistine army. The army was behind him, and there's one young man. He's not a great warrior, but he's confident, and he is full of virtue. He has the absolute determination to do what is right. No other Israelite would go out and take on the giant, but this young boy did. But he ran toward the army. Now, that's just one young man running toward the army. That statement has just always impressed me. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon the face to the earth. That was a great victory that David won that day. He had a lot of virtue. He was absolutely determined to do what is right, and he had the courage to do what was right. That's a classic example of virtue that's under consideration in the Christian graces. Now let's turn to Daniel chapter 3 and read about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Remember that the Jews in the southern kingdom had been taken to Babylon, where they were in captivity. A number of young men were taken captive, and they were trained in the ways of the Babylonians, and after going through a period of training, they would in turn rule their own people. Now, say what you want to about the Babylonians. In my judgment, they were quite shrewd in this area. They used Jews to govern their fellow Jews, but they trained them in the ways of the Babylonians first. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was a very vain man. Remember, the Babylonians worshipped idols. And he built a great big image. And he issued a command that all the people in his kingdom, when they heard the sound of the musical instruments, were to fall down and worship. If they failed to do so, they would be cast into the burning, fiery furnace. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were filled with virtue because, you see, the law of Moses said that the Israelites were forbidden to worship idols. they had to make a choice. Would they obey the king or would they obey God? Years later, the apostles would say, we ought to obey God rather than men. That's exactly what these three young men did. Well, let's read about it. Daniel 3, let's start at verse 13. Now, it was reported to the king that these three young men would not bow before his image. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if you worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Now listen to this. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? I could almost see the sneer on the king's face when he made that statement. You see, he was a vain man. Little did he know that Jehovah is the one who had put him in his position to accomplish his will. Well, he wanted to know who that God was that would deliver these young men out of his hands. Well, he's about to find out. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. And that word careful, as we pointed out many times, means full of care. In other words, we're not worried about how we're going to answer you. Our minds are made up. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, that is, if God decides not to save us, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. That is a great example of virtue. Their lives were on the line. They were standing before the great Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. And that's the way they answered him. They had virtue. They had the courage and the determination to do what was right. First, they knew what was right. They also knew what was wrong. And they were determined to do that which was right. Of course, since we're in the book of Daniel, we have to look at Daniel himself. Chapter 6 and verse 10. Now, by this time, the Babylonians have been defeated by the Medes and the Persians. And Daniel had a very high position in the Persian government. But there were some other rulers who apparently did not like him, and they wanted to get rid of him. They looked for some dirt that they might bring against him. They couldn't find any. They finally determined that the only way they could find something to use against Daniel had to involve the law of his God. So they got the king to agree that if anyone made a request of any god besides the king, then the punishment would be being cast into the den of lions. So what does Daniel do? Chapter 6 and verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, Daniel knew about this law. And what do we know about the laws of the Medes and the Persians? They could not be changed. So Daniel knew that this law was in effect, that the king had signed it. What did he do? He went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed, and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Daniel was a man of virtue. He was determined to do what was right. And he refused to do that which was wrong. Well, you know the rest of the story concerning Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were cast into the furnace, but they were completely delivered. Not one hair was singed. The smell of the smoke from the furnace did not even get on them. Now that's complete deliverance. What about Daniel? Well, the mouths of the lions were closed and he was spared. These are great examples of Bible characters who possessed virtue. That is, the courage and the determination to do what is right. Now, maybe those illustrations will help us appreciate more fully some instructions that were given in Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, let's start at verse 10. The Apostle Paul tells us about standing against the wiles of the devil. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Now, these individuals we just looked at from the Old Testament, were they strong in the Lord and in the power of his might? They certainly were. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Those verses give us some instructions that will help us to be filled with virtue. It's important for us to have the courage and the determination to do what is right as we endeavor to stand against the wiles of the devil. Well, I believe that these verses that we just examined will help us understand exactly what virtue is. We've seen it demonstrated in the lives of several great Bible characters, but virtue, as it's being considered in the Christian graces, has to do with courage and the determination to do what is right. Let's talk about a few general principles that have to do with virtue. For one thing, and this is a practical lesson to learn from the book of Ruth, our actions show whether we possess virtue. Now, remember those Bible characters we just looked at from the Old Testament? In one case, was virtue ever mentioned specifically? No. The word's not found in those verses we read. But we certainly see virtue being demonstrated, don't we? Those are great illustrations of it. The point is, we know that David, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel were men of virtue because they demonstrated it in their lives. Well, we don't have to go around telling others that we're filled with virtue in order for other people to know about it. The Bible teaches that we show virtue by our actions. Those great Bible characters we just looked at, they demonstrated virtue. Well, let's see how this point is made in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 11. Ruth is a very short Old Testament book. It's only four chapters long, but it provides a great demonstration of God's providence at work. We also read about how a woman of Moab, Ruth, actually was included in the genealogy of our Lord. She had a mother-in-law named Naomi, and Ruth was devoted to taking care of her mother-in-law. So much so that she left her homeland of Moab, went with Naomi back to Palestine, and there she lived among the Jews. And as far as I can tell, she was converted to the Jewish religion. Now, in God's providence, he saw to it that she came in contact with a man named Boaz. That's a very special story to consider. But I want you to notice a statement that Boaz made about Ruth. It's in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 11. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. How did the people of that city know that Ruth was a woman of virtue? Because they had seen her demonstrate it in the care for her mother-in-law. He said, the whole city knows that you're a woman of virtue. What a great statement to make about a godly woman. Well, our actions actually show whether we possess virtue. I think we've already seen that illustrated several times in the lives of these great Bible characters, but Boaz made that statement about Ruth. The whole city, the whole town knows that you're a woman of virtue. Why? Because Ruth had demonstrated her virtue over and over again. Well, do you think it was easy for Ruth to leave her homeland, to go to a strange country, and to be devoted to taking care of her mother-in-law? I don't think that was easy at all. But she was determined to do what was right. She had virtue. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 12 and read verse 4. Now we're looking at several general principles that have to do with virtue. This verse teaches us that virtuous people are a blessing to others. Proverbs 12 and verse 4. A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband. Now that's the part of this verse that we're especially concerned with. The rest of it says, but she that maketh ashamed is as rottenness in his bones. Well, that's also true. But we're concerned with the first part of this verse. A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband. In other words, virtuous people are a blessing to others. Now, we ought to be concerned with growing in virtue. There are some instructions that we need to follow. We've already talked about some instructions found in Ephesians chapter 6 having to do with putting on the whole armor of God. But let's notice a passage that has to do with our thinking. Philippians 4 and verse 8. And I want you to notice what's included. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Well, to grow in virtue, and we're certainly concerned about that because it's one of the Christian graces, it's important that we think on the right things. We need to think about things of virtue. The wise man said, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Well, you can't be a virtuous person and dwell on unvirtuous things. That just won't work. It's important that we meditate upon the things of virtue that will help us to be virtuous. Well, if we're going to talk about virtue, we have to spend some time in Proverbs 31. Because this great chapter of Proverbs deals with a woman of virtue, a virtuous woman. And while the chapter has to do with a woman, there are some practical lessons to learn that relate to all of us. Remember, we demonstrate virtue by our actions. Others can see virtue as is demonstrated in our life, just like we looked at those great Bible characters who certainly possessed virtue. They showed it. Well, there are some valuable lessons we can learn about virtue from Proverbs chapter 31. I've always loved the latter part of this chapter, beginning at verse 10 and going to the end of the chapter. But after studying those verses for quite a while, one day I spent some time looking at the first 9 verses and learned some valuable lessons from those opening verses. Now, first off, keep in mind that Solomon did not write this chapter. He wrote most of the Proverbs. Not all of them, but most of them. This last chapter is credited to King Lemuel. And he wrote down something that his mother taught him. Verse 1 says, "The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him." Have you ever heard it said, "The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world"? Has to do with the influence that a mother will have upon her child. Here we have a man who's a king, and he's remembering a lesson he learned from his mama. She taught him well. Well, let's look at the first 9 verses. We've already read verse 1. Verse 2 says, "What, my son? And what the son of my womb, and what the son of my vows? Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law, and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish, and wine unto those that be of heavy hearts. Let him drink and forget his poverty, and remember his misery no more. Open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy." In other words, Lemuel's mother taught him to be a man of virtue. She taught him to practice virtue by, number one, forsaking activities that were wrong. She pointed out getting involved with the wrong type of women, also giving himself to strong drink. You see, she knew that Lemuel would not be a good king if he failed to follow those instructions. But then, there's a positive side. She taught him to practice virtue by pursuing activities that are righteous. You see, there's two sides to virtue. Virtue, that is the determination to do what is right, certainly involves forsaking things that are wrong, but then pursuing things that are right. Well, both of these activities that Lemuel's mother taught him would require courage as well as determination to do what is right. Well, Lemuel, his influence would be greatly affected by his queen. So Lemuel's mother taught him the value of a woman of virtue. I believe she was teaching her son to pursue this type of woman to be his wife and therefore to be his queen, having a great influence upon his empire. What about the value of a virtuous woman? Verse 10 says, "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price or her value is far above rubies." Sometime, take a concordance and look up the word rubies. It's not found many times in the Bible, but it is found several times. And quite often, rubies are mentioned in connection with something of value. A comparison is being made between something that's important and the value of rubies. Rubies are gems that are very precious. They're very valuable, very beautiful. But the value of a woman of virtue is far above rubies. Rubies are valuable. There's no doubt about that. But a virtuous woman, her value is far above rubies. Well, that should have gotten Lemuel's attention right there. This is something that his mother taught him. She taught him about the value of a woman of virtue. Well, he goes on to show what makes a virtuous woman so valuable. For one thing, she has a special relationship with her husband. Verses 11 and 12. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. In verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. Well, she has a very special relationship with her husband. She trusts him and he trusts her. There's a special bond. She won't do anything to damage his reputation. She's very concerned about her own behavior, her own words, and so forth, because she realizes that his reputation is going to be affected by her behavior. Well, this woman of virtue is industrious, and she works willingly. Verses 13 and 14, she seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hand. She is like the merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar. Verse 16. She considereth a field and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand she planteth a vineyard. Verses 18 and 19. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. Verse 24, she maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. This woman's quite industrious, isn't she? And she's no slacker. She works willingly. And she's quite diligent in looking after her family's welfare. Verse 15, she riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. Verse 21. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. Verse 27. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. In addition to being concerned about the welfare of her family, she is strong, she is honorable, she's wise, but she's also kind. Verse 17 says, she girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. Verse 22, she maketh herself coverings of tapestry, her clothing is silk and purple. Verses 25 and 26, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. You know, many people today have the idea that a strong woman is rather boisterous and so forth. I don't find that in this description of a virtuous woman. She's strong, she's industrious, she's somewhat independent, but yet in her tongue is the law of kindness. That's a wonderful statement. Over the years, Teresa and I have known a lot of ladies, and that's a good description of them. In their tongues was the law of kindness. That's a great statement to be made about someone. But she's also concerned about the needy. Verse 20 says, she stretcheth out her hand to the poor, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. Well, because she is so valuable, her value is far above rubies, she deserves to be praised. Will she praise herself? No, she would never do that. Others take care of that for her. Verse 28, her children arise up and call her blessed. her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Well, this is a great lesson on virtue. While the direct application has to do with the woman of virtue, these principles apply to everyone who is concerned about developing the Christian grace that we call virtue. Well, to keep in mind that developing the Christian graces listed in 2 Peter 1 is to be done with all diligence. In other words, we're to give it our very best effort. Faith is the foundation upon which the graces are to be added. We studied faith from the great faith chapter of the Bible. But to our faith, we are to add virtue. Virtue has to do with courage and the determination to do what is right. Now, with the first Christian grace, virtue, being developed, that's the courage to do what is right. That will help us to have the commitment that's necessary for adding the other graces. I always wondered why these graces are listed in the order that they are. I think we can see why. Faith is the foundation, but the very first grace is virtue. That is courage and the determination to do what is right. With that, it will lead us to develop the others and continually grow in them.